Welcome to Executives After Hours, real conversations with real leaders. This is your host, Dr. James Kelly. I want to make you a promise that over the next 60 minutes, you will learn at a minimum two things. One, every leader and executive makes mistakes on the way to the top. And two, and more importantly, everyone has a unique story to tell. And that's what we do here on Executive After Hours. We sit down with leaders across a variety of industries, and we talk to them about their unique story. So welcome to the community, and stay tuned for today's episode on your Executives After Hours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Executives After Hours. This is your host, me, Dr. James Kelly. Today's episode, it's kind of a long one compared to what it's been recently, but it was just an unexpected pleasure, and really we covered a lot of topics, but two really important topics that I think need to be discussed. And so, you know, this episode is with Brandi Richard. She introduces herself at the beginning of the podcast, so I'll let her give you the full explanation of who she is, but book author is one of them, YouTube TV show host is another one of them, and so on. But honestly, Brandi and I talk about her being raped, and we talk about her being a black woman in America, in corporate America. So I think pretty important topics in today's day and age and what's going on in the news right now. So we discuss her life and how that impacted her both. And there's stuff I had to take out. I mean, I took out a whole chunk of stuff that was really fascinating that you can go to my website and check out the full-length episode there at drjameskelly.com. At the same spot, you can also upload your Crucible for a project that's starting the first of the year. All right. Go to iTunes, leave a review, but listen to this episode. I mean, it's a really important episode if you have a daughter. If you don't understand, maybe have someone else thinks, have a listen. I think that you'll be appreciative of this. And I really think that Brandi's openness and honesty and transparency around these two really serious topics is welcomed and warranted. And her bubbly personality makes it easy to talk about it. You don't feel threatened or uncomfortable like most of us do when we talk about, especially race. So have a listen today to this episode with Brandi Richard. Really important episode. So yeah, all right. I'll leave it at that. Have a nice week, and I will talk to you guys on Thursday. See you. On today's fantastic episode, I keep trying to come up with these superlatives to open up the show, and I always fail miserably. Today on the episode, I have Brandi Richard. Brandi, thank you for coming on Executive After Hours. I appreciate your time and energy. How are you this morning?
I am wonderful. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be on.
No problemo. So I'll set up the scene for my audience here so they understand how you and I met. I signed up for something from a woman named, and I think it's Mary Sims is her actual business name, right? Is it Mary Sims?
Right.
Yeah. And she's a public relations specialist around creating personal identity, personal branding. At least that's the way I understood it. So is that okay? I'm on the right path still. And so she does this amazing thing, Mary does, where she has her clients pitch themselves to a bunch of podcasters. And so I was intrigued by this. And so, in fact, a side story is the reason why I found out about this is that Mary produced an article that was about the top podcasts. And I started reading it, and I'm a bit competitive. I did play college sports. And I saw that there were podcasts on that list that I know I've heard of that I believe that I am better than. And I don't mean that as an arrogant stance, but I think that the content I provide is better than those shows. And so I kind of inquired, like, well, wait, how did you make this list? How did you get to that? And can I be included in the next list? And blah, blah, blah. So anyhow, so then she's like, oh, sure. Do you want to be part of this pitch? And this is where I met Brandy, was part of this pitch. Now, the best part about Brandy is that there was probably, what, 10 pitches, 8 to 10 pitches, something like that?
Yes.
And this is the best part about your pitch, Brandy. And I'm going to use you in the third person while I'm talking to you in the first person, so it's going to sound a little weird, is that typically you were supposed to say, I want to pitch to this podcast, right? And you would pick one. And there were some really good ones there on the show or on the call. And Brandy says, what would you say? Like, I want to pitch like 12 podcasts, right? So like, you just went all in. Like, you didn't even care. You're like, I'm going all in. Because they're really, the rules were arbitrary at that point. Like, you kind of could do whatever you want. And so anyhow, and I just loved that gusto about you. And so I was fortunate enough that I was one of the select 12 of the 12. And so so then I kind of put Brandy through the ringers a little bit. I made her jump through a couple of hoops because I want to make sure that you know what you're getting in for, that we're a match. You get that from that standpoint. So anyhow, yeah. So with that big, huge introduction for no apparent reason other than to hear my own voice, Brandy Richards, can you please tell my audience where you're at and what you do?
So thank you for that huge introduction. And I am a recent author of a book called Operation Growth. I work during the daytime for the same agency that Mary just left from. I actually took her job. And so the reason why I was a part of this podcast,
I love it.
Pitch session was because she promised to give me as much training as possible on my new role. And I thought, what better way to understand how you do your job and how you're excellent at it than to just pay for your class? And so I signed up. I participated. She's absolutely incredible. And I was fortunate enough to be there. But one of the things that she talks about is being disruptive and being disruptive in a good way or a message across. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to be disruptive today and pitch to as many people as I think will benefit from the content that I have to provide. So I'm a mother, former vegan. I'm not a vegan anymore. I actually eat meat now. Government employee.
That's why you started eating meat. You started working for the government.
Yes. It was the stress, right?
Yeah.
But really, I decided that I was going to write a memoir about my life, which it would seem kind of strange that I would write a memoir without being a millionaire or having achieved some certain stature or status. But I wrote it because I felt like I was still going through lots of challenges, and I wanted to be able to document for my daughter those challenges that I had been through, give her tips on how to overcome them, and hopefully give other people just hope that even when you face your darkest moments and times, you can still find joy and happiness and be able to move forward.
So let's back up a little bit, because I think one of the things that's really important for me to understand is, you know, you don't only have the book. I mean, you've got this, what is it? I had it up a second ago, like a TV show you're trying to do. You've got what's called the Brandy Show.
Yes.
You've got this consultancy on the side you're trying to do. You clearly, and I'm going to assume no one in the government will listen to this anyways. So you clearly, you clearly have ambitions beyond what you're doing. That's not a bad thing, right? That's not a bad thing. And I think that like, what I want to understand is where, you know, you'll get, having written a book now as well as you, there's a level of drive and motivation behind it. So what I wanted to understand is, where does this motivation come from?
So clearly I'm a busybody.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, clearly I don't like being stagnant and not having things to do. But I believe that it comes from my desire to want to help people, which is very cliche, but help people in a very specific way. So I used to call myself the young professional advocate, and it's very easy for me to speak on behalf of other people rather than to speak on behalf of myself. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if I feel like I'm treated badly or hurt or something along those lines, it's hard for me to speak up and say, you know, that's not right. Or, you know, these aren't the types of things that you XYZ person should do to me. It's very easy for me to see someone sit next to me being treated badly and say, hey, now look, mm-hmm. what you're not going to do is treat that person poorly. And so I did some soul searching and realized that instead of being this champion for just anybody, I should really figure out which areas and which types of people or groups of people I really wanted to support. And I realized those were women and girls.
It sounds like you do the things that you want to do because you want to heal yourself from as a child. So you use your activities now as a way to heal the teenage Brandy, the child Brandy. So I guess the question that kind of is born out of that is, what happened to you in that age bracket that made you feel like you needed to heal yourself?
Oh, absolutely. And I document it in the book. I am a rape survivor. Mm-hmm. And it was really challenging to even write the words mm-hmm. in the book because I didn't want to believe that that could actually happen to me. Or that it actually did happen to me. There were times in my childhood that I blocked out because I didn't want to remember that portion of my childhood.
How old were you?
I was actually in 8th grade.
Wow.
And to be honest with you, it was really a weird experience because you think that, and I had this conversation with my daughter, which is so strange. I talk about that as well in the book. It's really strange because you think that you're bad enough for certain things. And that's how I wrap my brain around it. You feel like you can go to these parties that your parents tell you not to go to, or you can mm-hmm. sneak out of the house and do these things that your parents tell you not to do, not realizing that once you get there, you're on your own. Mm-hmm. And I was a very sheltered kid. And so there was no reason that I should have had to go through that as a young person. But because I left the confines of my family's home, went out on my own, doing things that young people typically do. Now, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. But because I ventured out and did that, I was caught in a position in a house with people that I knew, but with a guy that I also knew that I didn't expect to not honor my wishes when I said no.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm definitely still in process of healing from that. I've been to therapy. I've done those things that you're quote unquote supposed to do to be able to get past it.
Sure.
But every time I speak to someone who has dealt with that, every time I talk to other leaders who confide in me once I've shared my story with them, that they've had to deal with that. Even I know young women who were leaders in my organization as adults who dealt with that. And it's just so weird to me that people are still dealing with rape.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is that still not necessarily a thing? But why is it still so prevalent when we know so much about it? Like,
yeah.
When people are actually talking about it now.
So, first of all, thank you for sharing that, because that is super traumatic event. When it happened, did you know that's what it was called?
I didn't. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was in a space where I had said no and he continued. And I said no again, and he continued. But I took a lot of the blame on myself because I felt like I shouldn't have been there at that moment.
I would imagine shame too, right? Like shame.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
Absolutely. Because I knew that I shouldn't have even been close to a boy like that, because my parents had clearly explained to me, you know, these are the areas you don't let people touch.
Yeah, yeah.
These are the things you don't let people do to you.
And teenage boys are evil. So, like, having been a teenage boy.
But they're not evil.
Well, I know. But, like, we're very sexualized individuals. And so I think that, like, I'm not justifying any of it, by the way. I'm just saying as a male, we're very sexualized. And it comes down to an understanding of the right and wrong and respecting the will. And for God's sakes, you're 13 years old, right? So, like, that shouldn't even be part of the vernacular. I mean, even though it is, it shouldn't be.
But for a teenage boy, mm-hmm. I think their focus, and I actually reconciled this because it keeps me from living in that space anymore. They are focused on that drive or what have you. They're not focused on what you're saying to them in that moment. So my message to my daughter when I was explaining to her how not to allow those things to happen to her was to stay out of those situations where you're in confined spaces and you're not okay with moving into sex. Like, at a very young age, you shouldn't be putting yourself into situations where you can't leave if you need to leave, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Did you ever have a conversation with your parents about it afterwards, or was it kind of like, man, I can't say anything or I'm in deep shit?
I couldn't say anything or I was going to be in deep shit, first of all. And so it wasn't until I went to college that I had a conversation with them about it. And even to this day, like my dad, as I was writing this book and I was telling him, you know, some of the things that were going to come out, and he was like, now explain to me. I said, Daddy, I can't explain that to you because I can't have that. I can't have that conversation with my dad.
Why can't
you? There's a certain level of shame that's associated with it. And coming to the man who did all that he could to protect your honor and keep those types of things from happening to you is just something that I haven't been able to bring myself to do. Now, I've been able to talk to my mom about it. And, you know, this conversation isn't stressing me out or anything like that. So I can definitely talk about it. But it's just something that's really challenging to do, especially because I knew the guy that I was, this happened with, like my dad wasn't fond of him. You know, my dad had told me to watch out for him, but I put myself in a position where I couldn't get away.
I feel like as a parent, the first rule of thumb is never tell your kids you can't do something or to stay away from someone. I don't even mean that as a sarcastic joke. I mean, like as soon as I tell any one of my kids don't do something, it's like an absolute magnet for them to do it. You know? Don't touch the hot stove. Ow! All right, I just said don't touch the hot. Like, why would you not listen to me? You know? And I feel like that's such a challenge. Do you think that you would ever or you'll ever get to a point where you and your dad can talk about it? Or is it one of these things where – because, you know, you don't ever want the shame to rule your choices. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read, what's her name? Brene Brown? Brene?
Love her.
Yeah. So, like, you know, her book about, her book is in my book.
Her book, all of Imperfections. The books came from Brene Brown.
Yeah. So, like, the Imperfections book. I can't remember the actual title, but like, you know, did that resonate with you at all?
Absolutely. And understanding that that's what was driving my response to that incident was really enlightening and helpful for me. But what was also helpful for me was having conversations with men later in my life who felt like I was a little uptight or not as open. You know, people would say, oh, she's just a prude. She won't dance. She won't do this. She won't do that. And I was doing all of these things to take attention away from myself because I didn't want to attract attention to me that would then cause something bad to happen to me. But in having those conversations with guys, I started to realize, like, in some instances, and I know people who have suffered sexual assault will come looking for me after I say this, they are not trying to hurt you. Like, I don't think it's all this malicious, I want to have sex with her, and so I'm just going to bend her to my will and make her do. I don't think that that's always the thought process. I think it's like, now my mind is completely gone. I'm after this sex thing and I'm just going to do it. And I'm not listening anymore. Like, my brain has shut off and I'm not paying any attention. And I don't think that their parents and their male role models are explaining to them that there's a point when you almost absolutely have to ask. Like, if you're not married to the person, if you haven't been dating the person for a very long time and have this understanding about each other, you can't assume that someone wants to sleep with you.
Hell, even with marriage, you have to ask, right? Like, even marriage, I got to ask, right? Like, it's not like, hey, hon, you ready to go? It doesn't work that way. Like, I've got a whole routine. I got a checklist I got to go through, massage, hugs. I mean, it's a list, right? And so it's not even like that. Even when you're married, you have to have a process of approval, if you know what I mean. I also kind of wonder around this whole idea of does, and I think society is much better about it now than it was when we were growing up. And I don't know how old you are. I think you look like you're about 25, but I know you're a little bit older than that. but you know, I remember growing up just getting tons of mixed messages. Now, yeah, you know, and I don't think I've ever said this on my podcast or not, but, you know, I'm clearly an open person. You know, my first porno that I ever saw, I was in third grade. Now, talk about the
the
mind meld that is for a third grader. In fact, the first Playboy I saw at third grade, and the first live porno was probably third or fourth grade as well, probably fourth. And so that has just that in itself, right? You think about the internet now and how easy it is to see sex and intercourse and things like that. Like that whole thing completely effed me up for a really long time. Like in my head, I thought love was sex. I thought that was the equation, right? If you love him, you have sex. And that's just what happens. Like doesn't really matter. And so my point is that sometimes society used to create this impression of what was okay in an intimate moment and what approval actually meant through words. And, you know, I think it's way better now because this topic is way out there. It's more conversation. You know, the on-campus sexual assaults are rampant. I mean, it's out there, which is great. You know, as a dad of two daughters, like when you first started telling me that you got raped, I had like rage building inside me of how much I'd want to kill the kid who did that to my son or to my daughter or my son. Uh-huh. Really, it doesn't really matter either way. Like the rage I would have.
They're going to die.
Yeah. You know, so like, and I imagine your dad, as he found out, was probably really angry.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like you can see it on his face when I say anything about it. But at the same time, my view of those types of situations and interactions is so different now that I really have empathy on the person who did it or for the person who did it. And while my dad won't, like he never will, I do understand just from my conversations with very close friends who are male that there are times when they feel like they're leading something in the sexual arena that they have no business leading, and they're not being told to ask that question of, is this okay or not?
I think that's such a, I mean, I think your stance is really, really interesting. I use the word interesting and fascinating about 7,000 times in my podcast, by the way. But I think it's really fascinating. I'm using both now because empathy isn't usually what's given, right? But I do think that by giving empathy or even sympathy or compassion in any of those allows you to let go and stop playing the victim role. I think that's a transitional emotion.
I don't feel like a victim.
Oh, you don't sound like one at all. Yeah, you don't sound like it at all.
Yeah, no. No. So I'm in a really great space in my life, but the conversations that I have with my daughter around it are just,
yeah. So like, tell me about that.
They're hilarious.
So tell me about that. 'Cause this is like the last question. We can move off this topic, but like I was actually, when you first said you talked about your talked about this with your daughter, I thought, okay, could I be a fly on that wall? 'Cause I'd really like to see how that conversation goes.
So because there was someone else in the room, I have perspective. Well, he wasn't in the room the entire time, but this guy that I was dating at the time pretty seriously was watching television with us, and my daughter was doing some work, supposedly doing some homework on her computer. And so I get her computer to help her to print something And here are these chats. Oh, she's going to kill me for this. There are these chats with some guy, like a random guy that I don't know. And his emoji or whatever is like something ridiculous, like something with a gold chain and a hoodie or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like epic. Mm-hmm. And she's having these like very explicit, this explicit conversation while we're sitting there watching, you know, whatever. She's sitting there doing that. And I was like, hold up, wait a minute. Stop all presses. Yeah. All homework will cease. We need to have a conversation. And I was like, do you understand what you're setting yourself up for? Like, I know that you're not ready for what you're talking about mm-hmm. here in this chat. And because I know that you're not ready for it, like, you really need to nip this in the bud, because what's going to happen when you find yourself alone with this individual and I'm not there to protect you, or you mm-hmm. can't call me, or I can't get there fast enough, or he's stronger than you. And you then decide that all this stuff that you're talking crazy about, that you're not willing to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. And she just sat there like stoically. And then I went ahead and started telling her about my story, which was something that I had never told her before. And she got it. Like, she understood it.
Wow.
Because my daughter is a really, like, great individual. I know everyone thinks their kids are the best. My daughter is the best.
You know what? It's a parent's right to say that, by the way.
She got it. Yeah, because I knew that she got it. And since then, like, how she interacts and how she engages with her sexuality and her understanding of her body and who she is, I'm extremely proud.
Awesome.
Of what that looks like. But it was because I had to have that conversation with her because I saw this crazy chat on her screen.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think not only in our society is it tough enough to be a woman and lead, but then you multiply that by being even a black male in lead, and then you multiply that by being a black female in lead. Like, talk to me about how you maneuver that. I don't, you know, when I talked to Janae, she always said there was like unwritten codes, right? Like, there were certain things she knew how to maneuver around, certain things not to. And we would have these just fascinating conversations about race, because I grew up in Portland, Oregon. It's a really liberal white town, not a real liberal town, a real liberal white town. So like, and so like, you know, I open to everything, but my understanding is shallow around this topic. So help a white brother out, please. Help me understand this. What is, because I don't think the audience understands the complexities, and I think that's what's important.
It's hard enough being a female leader, but what I will tell you, because I don't know if I can do it justice in the time that we have, what I will tell you is,
you're
that,
right, yeah, yeah.
Being a black female leader in black spaces and being a black female leader in white spaces, predominantly white spaces, are equally challenging. Mm. Challenging in different ways, but equally challenging. There's the black male patriarchy in black spaces, where the expectation is that most of the leaders, if not all of them, should be men. And why, you woman, would you want to lead here? Is challenging, but I was able to deal in and maneuver in those spaces. I find it fascinating every day that I go to work, that as a black female, I constantly have to prove that I'm gifted, mm-hmm. or that I have the skills, that the position that I hold, the quote unquote grade that I have within the, mm-hmm. the federal government, show that I have. Like, I don't care if I'm a GS-5 or a GS-15. When I walk into a room, I still have to prove that I know things mm-hmm. that allowed me to get that job. Whereas when other people come in, they don't have to do that. And I think across the board, even when I deal with people who will tell me, well, I know a lot about black people, and I did a mission trip in Africa, and, you know, I helped people, and it's not to be funny, but
no. But things. I think the irony is that we do that as humans, right? We do that as humans. We say, oh, I met someone who was different race than me. I totally get it. Like, yeah, go ahead.
But you don't get it. And it's like, but I'm not the person that you need to help, like, people who are suffering and dying from malnutrition. I'm the person that you need to be able to treat as an equal, mm-hmm. like the person who has worked extremely hard to get to this level in my career. And I don't know that people understand. And sometimes, you know, not every Black person is equal, but I work really hard and I do really great work. And so what makes me feel diminished and what makes it difficult for me when I go to work every day is for people to make me relitigate why I should have a position every day.
So, I mean, this is awesome. So I have to, because as a typical white guy, I have very few limited white or a Black female friends. So,
now you have one.
I know, right? Well, I have two. I have three. It's funny. So I have another one in our department named Stephanie, who is also equally as awesome, a powerful woman who is kind and generous. But Janae would say, what did Janae say? Oh, when Janae started our school, this is so typical, right? She was basically like, I'm the token Black person. So she got put into every single photo, every single promotion, you know, and
I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
she hated it.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. So she hated it too. So she was like in every single thing. She was the first Black female to get tenure at the business school. I mean, she's an amazing, amazing woman. I have so much respect for Janae.
But let me tell you one thing about white men that I think you'll find beneficial. The people who have allowed me to be as successful as I am, the people that promoted me and gave me a shot, were white men who appreciated the fact that I didn't take any nonsense. Like, those were the people who elevated me in my career. I haven't had the same opportunities with white women as managers.
What
it's
do you
just
think
my
that
experience.
Is? I mean, yours is your own experience, but in your own experience, why do you think there's a difference? Do you think maybe the women are more threatened by you and the men are more open to the opportunity?
I don't know that that's it. Because they will definitely stand behind me when there's like, they want me to be the advocate for feminism. Mm-hmm. And they'll come tell me how badly the men are, because I'm in an agency that is led by a lot of men. Sure. And they'll tell me how bad it is that women aren't being treated fairly. And they'll want to like stand behind me as I rush in to fight the good fight.
As they push you up front. Yeah. Yeah.
But as far as opportunities, typically white men are in the position to give me the opportunity without having to explain it. Black men, I think, would give me an opportunity, but they, and this is just my opinion, they may have to explain why. Mm. That it's not because I'm, you know, they can't just promote a Black person and no one care about it. If they promote too many Black people, it's like, okay, well, why are you promoting this person?
Yeah.
So I have been very, very successful with white male bosses. So that's
phenomenal.
That's what I know.
So listen, I honestly could talk to you about this topic and I didn't give it enough time and or justice. well, because I think it's such an important topic, especially in America now, especially where the putrid and puke that's spewed out there on a daily basis makes me nauseous and embarrassed to be an American. And I don't even live in America right now. And I just, this is my probably, I don't know. It just makes me mad and it makes me sad and actually kind of emotional about it because there's just no need to have it. Right. And I think that, I say this quite often on the show, I feel like travel cures all ills. And as you travel and you see the world, we are so much more alike than we are different, regardless of color, race, you know, bald, dreadlocks, whatever, right?
Yes.
And so, like, I get so angry about the incessant need to focus on the differences. Like, I was even listening to a liberal podcast that the people are – it's really popular. And I got, like, two episodes in, and all they were doing was talking about what was wrong with the other side. And, you know, it's not like it's just the right side. The left just does it with less – vitriol and hatred,
right.
In my mind. But it still happens and it makes me nauseous anyhow. So deep breath. This is a question I ask everybody. And And I think it's a really important question for reflection for yourself. And I like to capture this as the final moment of our interview or our discussion, as our conversation. Brandy Richard, for where you're at in your life, for what you do, how do you define happiness?
Happiness is a butterfly. Which is so ridiculous.
Explain.
But butterflies. So every time I see a butterfly, I'm reminded that there's hope, regardless of what's going on around me. And I feel like God, the universe, what have you, whatever you want to call it, sends me butterflies to remind me that everything is going to be okay. So I could walk out of work and have had a terrible day, or I've had a horrible meeting, or something really tragic happens to me, and I see a butterfly, yellow ones are my favorite, flying across my windshield or down the street or out of a bush, and I know everything is going to be okay, because I'm not going to be happy all the time. But I do have joy all of the time. And those butterflies remind me of that.
That's awesome. Well, Brandy Richards, thank you for taking me on your life journey. And we only scratched the surface on a really interesting topic, which one we need to talk about in America, which is race in America and leadership and race in America. But thank you for entertaining that conversation, because I think I just, for me, it's a fascinating conversation that really needs to happen. So as I always sign off, thank you for your time, your energy, and your willingness to sit down with me on Executives After Hours.
You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Just believe it, believe it. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Just believe it, believe it. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. Just believe it, believe it.